And welcome to the latest episode of Gaming Disassembled. I am your host, Night of O, and with us, as always, is J. Sloan of Vanity Games. And it's the week before Christmas!
Woohoo!
I know, I'm excited.
The weather outside is frightful.
But fire is so delightful. And da-da-da-da, I don't know the rest of the word.
Since we've no place to go, play some games, play some games, play some games.
That's was pretty.
Well...
That was so nice. And I was on Amazon, and Elf is on sale for like $6, and I think I'm going to buy it for the fourth and final time.
How many versions do you have?
Well, here's the thing. Every time
Here's the thing. All right. Here's how it is. Tell me how it is.
I sell it because I go, well, you know, like I always need money randomly over the years. Yeah. And so then I sell it, and then I buy a fancier edition, and I sell that one. So now, like, the Blu-ray is... like $6, and I think I'm just gonna pop for it, and that's it. I'm not selling it. I'm not letting it go. I've spent way too much money on this damn movie, but I love it.
So I watched Elf recently myself because we both loved that movie, and it was
one of those
movies
changed.
That I gotta watch. And did you know that motherfucking Peter Dinklage is in that movie?
I'm gonna sound really bad right now.
You don't know who this is. Do you watch Game of Thrones at all?
No.
Okay. He plays the badass motherfucker Tyrion Lannister, okay? Which I'm not going to explain it to you because it's too fucking complicated. But this dude plays this really brutal house lord noble, but he's a dwarf in Game of Thrones. They call him Tyrion Halfman or whatever. But like he plays the estranged son of this guy because obviously that guy doesn't want a dwarf or a son or whatever, but like this one of the best characters in the whole show. So Peter Dinklage is on in Elf, and I'm like motherfucking Tyrion
Lannister. The small guy.
Just motherfucking Tyrion Lannister just fucking drop kicked Will Ferrell. Like it was awesome.
I knew the name. Like the name kept sounding familiar, and I could not place it. Yes, yeah. I love that part.
Oh my god,
I love that part. That part's great.
So
hope you find your dad. Love that. I love that movie. That movie's call just me, so fun.
Call it's me
so,
an elf again.
I know, he's so angry.
He's an angry elf. He must be from the South Pole. And then I lost it.
God, I love that movie.
I couldn't do it. So yeah, I've watched Elf. I'm actually in the middle of watching Scrooged right now. We took a break so that we could, you know,
Scrooged.
I could run my mouth at you. That's the Bill Murray version.
Ah, gotcha.
Right, we're right before the point where the fairy of Christmas present shows up and beats the shit out of him. So it's going to be a good time. I'm looking forward to that.
So it turns out that my girlfriend is a lot like me in that we're a sucker for those terrible, like, ABC Family Christmas movies that they do.
What you do?
Or anything on the Hallmark Channel. Like, those things, you know?
What did you do?
The ones that you go, who watches this? That's us. That's us. We are the ones who keep that channel around, right?
Oh my god.
Yeah, all the ones that have, like, you know, Andy Griffith in them, you know? Anything that had, like, these old movie stars, that's us. And you can thank us. I expect donations
because
of that.
Thank you so much. So anyway, that's how Christmas is going. I'm singing all the Christmas songs, watching all the Christmas movies.
I know, I'm excited.
And I'm looking forward to it. I've been having I took a little break from the comic for Christmas just because it was just too much of the crap to do at this time of year. So I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and have a very Merry Christmas on my own terms.
Well, this is going to be a very Christmassy couple shows here. And I'm excited because this time of year makes me happy, right? Because it's the time of year that everyone acts like they should act the other 11 months of the year. And they're not tools normally. Now... if you are tools, people will call you out on it. Again, something they should do the other 11 months of the year or whatever. But they don't. So it is what it is. But I'm excited. We just moved into our new place.
Sweet.
Over this weekend. And we've like it looks like a wreck in here. It's got all unpacked, you know, packed boxes and stuff. But like one of the first things I did was wrap her presents. So now I need to put them all
under the tree.
Yeah, I need to get the tree up so that it's in, you know, it's disheveled and it's half put together form in the corner, and I need to finish that so I can like have the one thing in here. The first thing was the Xbox, the second thing was the computer, and the third thing will be the Christmas tree. Screw plates,
Who needs it? Beat off the floor.
Screw cleaning supplies. These are the priorities. So one of the things that I would love for Christmas this year is to be able to play The Last of Us, which is a new game that's coming from Naughty Dog. It doesn't come till May of next year.
Yeah, so this is so not a Christmas present for anyone. But so I watched the trailer for that, and I'm like going, man, I really wish I weren't a huge wuss. You know, like, this game looks awesome. It's too bad I'm a sucker. Like, I don't know. So I may have to get that game for my housemates and then make one of them play it for
and
me.
And you can watch? Know? Yeah. It's gorgeous. Now, this has been on my radar for
me. Voice acting was what was getting me in it.
Exactly. It's so good. Like, it looks like if you closed your eyes, you'd think a TV show teaser was... was coming on, like by a major network.
Some Walking Dead things going on thematically, and the voice acting is like, really, good, which is just crazy because it's a video game to begin with, and nobody really associates good voice acting with video games, right?
It's rare. It's kind of rare. Or if it's really good voice acting, like the mouths don't match up, or it's really good voice acting, but the dialogue's shitty. Like, so, there's so many little, caveats to that. And this trailer and just this game in general looks to be just, the production values are ridiculous. Now, Uncharted, who, that's their other big series. I mean, the voice acting is excellent in those as well. But there was just, it's the tone in this, like, there's
that sense of survival, that sense of like humanity is screwed and these are the people that are left,
And and of course, I'm a sucker for anything that has one of the cruxes of this game looks to be the relationship between the older man and the one who looks like Ellen Page. It's not. But I swear, she does. Like, she's just a dead ringer.
Yeah, I totally see it now. I didn't even think of it. I just saw, like, oh, girl. Like, I wasn't thinking too hard about it. But.
The main guy character is Joel, and she's Ellie. But yeah, seriously, it was funny because people were joking about Ellen Page is actually featured in another game that's coming to the PS3 next year, which is called Beyond. And that game, she's actually, like, involved in. Like, she's done all the dialogue. She's mocap for and everything. But it was funny because people were like, well, she also, she has two games coming out. Because they looked at it's a dead ringer, And the voice actor is a completely different voice actor by the name of Ashley Johnson. But you could, if you just closed your eyes and didn't really think about it, it sounds like her too. So it's like, oh, Juno. That's awesome.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But, man, it looks so good. Yeah, even when the beginning of the trailer and the music starts playing, it's very Walking Dead-esque. Like, it's... Mm-hmm.
Well, the dude's even riding a freaking pony right in the middle of the trailer.
Yeah, he is.
Trailer. It was like, all right, guys. I appreciate your homage.
It's funny, though. I don't... Like, I know zombie and post-apocalypse has been one of the biggest settings of games and sci-fi and whatever for forever. So, I mean, that's not really anything to rail on. But, I know a lot of people are, like, burnt out to a point on zombies. But, man, talk about a background that just seems to be a great backdrop for quality stuff. Like, I was just playing The Walking Dead. And that's excellent. And, of course, The Walking Dead show is good, and so are the comics. But some of the stuff that are coming out.
I have this weird association, and I've never actually vocalized this before, so forgive me if it just sounds completely fucking crazy. But I think there is genuinely not a great deal of difference between Walking Dead and, say, Jersey Shore in terms of why we like to watch these things.
All right, continue with this thought. Continue with this thought. I'm eager to see where this goes.
Let's see. So I think the thing is that we as human beings like spectacle. We like conflict. We like seeing characters and characters that seem real to us. And I think that's our most primary concern with the fictions that we watch. You know, we like backdrops and settings and story even, is okay. But it actually just ends up taking a back seat to the thing that we want to see, really, which is dramatic tension between people. Lost had a lot of that too, and it was part of what made Lost so popular. I mean, you know, Lost had all of its mystery and shit going on too, but you actually gave a fuck about the characters.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think with Jersey Shore, you know, and other reality shows, because they are actually really real people, you know, it's easy to become invested in their lives because they're very complex and rich, because they're real. And I think that with these fictions that we like to watch with characters that are made up but close enough to being complex enough that we can believe they're real, that we get that same thrill out of watching them have their crazy-ass zombie conflicts on the screen as we do watching the cast and crew of Jersey Shore fuck around and drink a lot.
True. Yeah, I can see that. That was, I didn't know where that was going, but that makes total sense.
Yeah, so I have this guilty pleasure with like Walking Dead and stuff like that, and I guess True Blood falls into that too a bit, and some other shows, where I understand myself to really be no better than the people who like to watch crappy reality television. I just require marginally better production values on my soap opera dramas. That's all.
True, that makes sense. Yeah, it looks excellent. I'm stoked, and I don't own a PS3, but I'm kind of happy that May is that far away, because it might give me time to get one, and this excites me, because I will play. That's a system seller for me, you know. If I can find a good deal on one, I'd buy that in a heartbeat. So I'm excited for that. That comes out in May of next year. This trailer debuted at the VGAs. So I'll have you can go to their YouTube page, Naughty Dog's YouTube page, and you can catch, the newest trailer for that. One of the things that might make, well, your life a little better if you were in the post-apocalypse is a fugu. Now, what the hell's a fugu? A fugu is a small little creature that's born from an egg, and he is going to be living in your phone or your smartphone device.
You know, that just sounds like a great way to tell people that Alien has now figured out a way to digitally transmit themselves, and we all gonna die.
But they're extremely cute.
Oh, so that makes it okay. All right.
I think that makes it okay. Like,
I've had that problem where I'm like, you're adorable. I don't even care what you are.
Like, yeah. Here's the thing. I would have an alien in my house if, you know, he didn't, like, impregnate me and leap out of my stomach. Like, I would totally have an alien in the house.
You know, that was my criteria for a boyfriend too. So
well, that yes, that is an important.
So basically, I mean, I'd asked you, did you have, this is a new generation iteration of basically what were Tamagotchi, if you remember those from way back in the day. Did you have one?
I never owned one. I had a bunch of friends who did, so I played around with them, but I never actually owned one myself. And of course, like this type of thing. Now, what we're talking about is a new app that will be coming out spring next year. It's called Hatch. Now, this app is made by Impending and Real Mac, creators of the to-do app Clear, kind of like Wunderlist. But they're making a new version of this, and they even reference that in the article. And basically, it's kind of the thing, if you've played, like, there's a Facebook game. I mean, there's 10,000 Facebook games, but there's one that's like kind of the same idea. You know, you check on your pet and things like that. But, and they've created this whole fiction, you know, fugus are these creatures. And then there's this, you know, this whole ecosystem and stuff like that. But because of the device that they're happening on, right? The fact that it's going to be an app and a game, and the fact that you carry these things around with you constantly anyway. I mean, Tamagotchis.
No, you're right. Yeah.
Tamagotchis were little devices in themselves, right? You had to carry them separately. And that was also at a time where not everybody had a smartphone and things like that. Now,
did smartphones even really exist?
No, not really. Right. You know? And so the fact now that you carry these things anyway, and your contacts, your calendar, all these things are in them, like it's, I'm amazed that someone's not already done it. And if they have, It hasn't caught on.
So there's been versions of, like, there's an app called like Monster Pet Shop or something that kind of runs on the same principle, where there's a critter, or there's a whole pet shop full of critters, and, you know, and they make their money by letting you buy specialty items for your critters to help raise your critters with real money. But you can play the game with just your regular whatever free app that it is.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it. And don't get me wrong, I mostly didn't like it because I didn't have time to be fucking with my phone all day like that. So for me, you know, that was not a feature, and I kind of gave up on it and deleted the app and killed all of those tiny little imaginary pets. I'm sure were just wanting my love and attention in the app. This one, however, sounds a lot more interesting because it's not only interactive in the actual app itself, like when you open it up and want to play with your little pet, but it interacts with your other apps as well. So, you know, one of the things they were talking about was, you know, like you're playing music and on your phone, which I do all the time. And if you open it up, your little creature is going to be bopping its head to the music that you're playing, that kind of stuff. And that was the part where I started to get kind of charmed, you know? I was like, oh, it's reading my tweets.
And, like, it comes to the screen and, like, licks the screen and, it, like,
oh,
all the bopping to the music if you just listen to music. I love that it's actually interacting with the things that you're already doing on your phone, you know? So, like, that alone, that little level of interactivity or whatever makes it, you know, and I'm a sucker for these things, okay? I played, like, it wasn't even remotely the same thing, but it's the addictive nature of checking in on your whatever this is, your blank, you know, like
okay, sure.
I played that like Dragon Park game on my phone where it was like, I'm making a dragon park and like, I have to hatch different dragons and I have to breed all these dragons. And this, I checked that, like I played that thing for like a month and a half and was constantly checking my phone. Oh, did he hatch? Oh, did I put him here? Like I'm a sucker for that kind of, that thing has, gets its hooks in me very quickly. So the fact that this is even more so like, you know, I love the thing that they mentioned with the apple or whatever.
Oh yeah, that if you throw the apple away, it gives you like the big sad.
Yeah, it gives you the big sad face because it attaches itself to these things, and so if you throw them away, it's like throwing away, you know, dog's favorite toy. He's gonna be looking around for it. It's like, oh god, I see, like, 5 minute patches of my life just going down the drain.
I have to go check on my imaginary baby that I.
Oh, and he already has a name.
Oh really? Does he? What is his name?
Ralphie.
Ralphie.
I know, isn't it cute?
So I don't recall if there was a specific word on the development process of this app. I can't even actually remember who was developing it, or the name of it, or anything. Let's try this again. So Hatch for the iPhone. I hope they come out with an Android, because I don't actually have an iPhone. You know, sucks to be me if they don't come out with it. Oh, I didn't watch the video because I was at work. I have to watch that in a minute because you don't want to hear me screaming into the microphone on how cute it is.
It's the adorable factor, very much so. Like the backgrounds all have this very it's not anime. I don't know what, you know, honestly, the creature itself, you know, especially when it's younger, it looks like something out of Dragon Quest.
Here's the question that the original author of this article posed that I kind of was wondering about too. Like, is there a market for digital pets? Which you seem to say, of course there is, you know?
Well, yeah.
And even me, who's curmudgeonly about such things, is kind of moved. But the quote that I was really entertained by was the developer, Ayu, says, these things go way back. The Tamagotchis of the 18th century were clockwork automatons that would go on tour and mystify audiences. A clockwork pooping duck. A pooping duck. Let me repeat that. A clockwork pooping duck once toured all the royal courts of Europe to standing ovations. But now we can aim for something more ambitious and delightful. And we have the pooping covered too. I bet it poops cute. That's all I'm saying.
That is cute.
I bet it poops like little rainbows and marshmallows. And be like,
oh, man. That's cute, but it's kind of like, do you ever play the Rare Viva Pinata?
No.
Okay. One of the things, again, it's kind of the same thing, right? As far as like, well, they make pooping somewhat cute, right? Viva Pinata, when the other creatures, you know, because of course they were all creatures made out of, you know, they were all little pinatas. They're all made out of that paper mache
right.
stuff. So when you would get certain ones in like the pen area that like had a general disliking of each other, or one that was below it in the food chain, which means they ate them, they would eat them and then they would die. But when they died, they busted apart and candy fell out. Right?
Adorable animal deaths.
Adorable, like, and sadistic all at the same time. this little pool of candy, and it's just like, oh, that little creature died, and his name was Earl, and I raised him for, you know, whatever months. And it's like, it's weird how they can turn some kind of morbid thing like that.
You're like Earl, who I raised for months, died. Aww, look at him. He's so dead now.
He's full of candy.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but it's also okay. So there's a question too. This thing comes out. Are you gonna pay for it? 99 cents. Let's say it's 99 cents. You gonna pay for it?
So here's the thing. With the app market in general, they have nailed down the pricing. And I don't know what kind of impact it has on the seller end of things, but I know on the buyer end of things that 99 cents is exactly right for me to go, it's worth it, you know, at least to even play with it for a little bit, you know. Yeah. 99 cents is worth 10 minutes of my time, and if I get more than 10 minutes out of it, you know, it's an especially valuable application. So for 99 cents, yeah, I might. I'd have to read a little more about it or have a demo probably, but if the demo is cute enough, I'd be like, all right, let's see how this works.
But $1.99?
$1.99 would be too much.
See, isn't that weird? It's only a dollar more, but it's like, that's my...
It's not a dollar more. It's twice as much.
But it's a dollar more.
But my brain does not go $2 is no different than $1. My brain goes $2 is double a dollar. Double.
It's true, though. I can't say anything about you because I do the same thing. Unless you're Square. Everyone's figured out how these pricing structures work except for Square. Square, like, is completely oblivious and walks in and charges, like, $5 for a remake of a game that's, like, 20 years old. And you're like, really? Really? Really, guys? Even their new stuff that's, like, you know, specifically mobile. It's like, oh, $6. $7. No. $8.99. There was one. Was it Final Fantasy Tactics? It's $15. On a mobile store. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, ugh, come on, Square. Yeah. Speaking of Square, it's funny because I read a really good article today. Okay. That was all right, Square.
I sent you like 100. I mean, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna go trolling for interesting news, and then we're set up for like weeks. It's great.
It really is. And especially that one, because I do actually want to talk about that one, because I have a soft place in my heart for Final Fantasy VII.
I know you do.
But
I sent it to you. I was like, I never even played this game, but I know that he'll go all squeaky.
There's an article on Kotaku today, I believe, that was, it turns out Final Fantasy, it's their 25th anniversary. Okay. And it was an article that was, all right, we forgive you, Square, but it's time to get your shit together. Like, that was the title of the article. And the whole thing was like, okay, here's how we've gotten here. Now, we understand you made some missteps, right? Like, some severe ones. And we're amazed that you're, you know. And then they, like, clear stuff, like the, you know. And this is all, like, random current news. But, like, they clear stuff like the Hitman Facebook game. You know, like, they've made a ton of bad decisions over the last like 3 years or whatever. It's gotten pretty bad, right? So you're like, okay, you need to, it's time. And even he ends the article, it's like, okay, you're old enough to drink now, you're 25. Please stop fucking up, please stop doing shit wrong, it's time to grow up, you know.
What, like, is okay. It like going drunk and making shitty games is no way to go through life, son, you know.
You know, yeah. Like, it's like, come on, guys, really? You know, the brand is just deteriorating in front of me. And I love the brand, but still, it's like, ugh, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, nothing lasts forever. I also, we're getting so into stuff that we can save for another show.
I know. Okay, well, with that.
I was going to go straight into the Warcraft thing, and I'm like, no, suck it up. Get back on track. Where's that railroad at? Choo-choo, motherfucker. You were doing so good with your segues, too. Oh, my God.
So speaking of things that ended too soon.
There we go.
Like that,
seriously, and you have on fire tonight.
It got gotten off on the wrong path. You sent me a really good article that was from 1UP, and it was the title of it's called "The Dream Deferred: When Sega Got Out at the Right Time." And I've actually never really heard everyone who's listened to the show knows that I'm a huge Dreamcast fan, and like, you know, I loved that system for the short amount of time that it, you know. It was around, but
15 minutes. And it was
really was like 20 minutes. It was it wasn't around very long. I've never heard of a not defense is probably the wrong way to say it, but I've actually never heard someone positive about the fact that they made the right decision. Like, if you talk to most people, they're like, oh yeah, they left too soon, you know, the system, they made a bunch of missteps, whatever. And this is the first one that actually presents, like, a nice little, you know, the other side of the story. And maybe that, you know, things worked out for the best. And it was interesting. It's a really good article. Did you have a Dreamcast? I can't remember.
I had a boyfriend who had a Dreamcast. See, the thing is, and this is terrible, but I've gotten around being poor by dating guys who had the things. I mean, I liked the guys too. I wasn't dating that guy because he had a Dreamcast, because Jesus Christ, would that be a terrible dating criteria. But,
you had nerd sugar daddies. Is that what I hear?
Yeah. Well, no, you know, it's also why I didn't have a driver's license until I was 27. I mean, there's a lot of more going on there. But you know, so you call me a fake nerd girl if you want, but I got into all this nerd stuff because I would date nerds, but I mean, I could never really afford the systems and stuff myself.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of my experiences are, oh yeah, I dated a guy this one time who totally had that and it was cool. So I watched him play, what's that game you go ape shit for with the Sky Pirates and shit?
Oh, Skies of Arcadia.
Yeah. So I watched him play Skies of, that was a Dreamcast game, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I watched him play Skies of Arcadia and it looked really cool. And we had that discussion about me thinking he had a t-shirt with a polo shirt or something with the Dreamcast logo, crying a single tear and saying, "Why didn't you love me?" Well, it turns out I made that up in my head. He probably made that joke and then I just remembered it as a real thing. But then I ended up drawing it myself because I was just so enchanted by the...
I know, I saw that. I loved it.
Yeah. So... Yeah, right. So, you know, I understand that there's a lot of love and fervor for the Dreamcast, and I understand why, too. It's not like it's like, you know, why does everybody really talking about these telegraphs? Like, we've really moved beyond telegraphs. We don't have to worry about that anymore. But no. The Dreamcast was a pretty nifty system, especially, you know, for the time. So now this particular article points out that... that the market at the time was a little more volatile than most people give it credit for. And at the same time that Microsoft just unveiled the Xbox, you know, that everybody was buying up PS2s like nobody's business, including me. I mean, that was what I had instead of any of these other consoles. That's what I shelled out for, was the PS2. And then Nintendo, you know, has remained a really strong force in the market. And I guess it was really just too crowded, and Sega itself was moving into the developer side of things over the hardware side, the console side. So
I love not it's related, but it's an aside. I love articles that, and this is a credit to the writers and stuff of these articles. And I've read I only say this because I've read like three today that were just like they gave you a peek behind the curtain. And, you know, there was a really good one on Obsidian and, like, the background of them and kind of their history and things like that. It's really interesting. And this one's good, too, because I can personally relate to most of these. Now, one of the things it talks about is the PS2, and both you and me had one. The difference was that I was one of the reasons, because as much as I loved the Dreamcast, I had owned a PlayStation previously. And... you know, I had everything for the Dreamcast, okay? I had four controllers. I had four of the little VMUs, all different colors, all playing different stuff, you know, raising my little pet from Sonic or whatever. And then I had the keyboard. I think I had the fishing pole controller. I didn't even think I owned a fishing game. Like, I just bought this stupid crap or whatever, but I just bought all this. You know, I really used the modem at the time, the 56K modem. I used that. I played Phantasy Star, whatever. I loved the system. And then when the PS2 came out, all I did was I saved a little extra money, and I took this bag. Actually, at the time, it was a box. I took this box of, like, all of my Dreamcast stuff, like every single thing. And by that point, I had a decent amount of games. Took it all to GameStop. Or actually, at the time, I took it to Funko Land. I miss Funko Land.
Okay, right.
And I loved that place. And I took it all to Funko Land.
And abandoned it like an unwanted kitten.
And I did. And I traded it in towards a PS2. And I got a PS2. Like, I forget how much credit I got or whatever. And, like,
I
did
it. Like, you know, $1,990. So we'll say four.
Yeah, right. Yeah, probably. So, and then I took my PS2 home and I played my Zone of the Enders game because it was the only game I had for it. And I was, it was, it's funny, as at the time you look at it, and it was such an inferior experience at the beginning. Like, I had
Right.
one game. I traded in like five stellar titles to play one pretty good game. And, but I was part of the reason, right? I'm part of the reason that they went, yeah, well, our sales went down and we didn't sell stuff. There was also a mention of the piracy problem. And what's
Oh,
funny
right.
is,
Apparently that you could, I didn't know that part actually, that you apparently could hack a Dreamcast game without even trying.
well, I didn't know it till later because I remember going over to a friend's house and he had a Dreamcast. And I went to go, he's like, oh, go grab this game. We were going to play Soul Calibur because Soul Calibur was like, at that point was just amazing. And that's like my favorite fighting game still, but it was just at the time it was still pretty new and stuff. And so I went into his like CD case, and that's where he had all his games. And there wasn't a bought one in the bunch. Like they were, it looked like you went to someone's party or whatever. Oh, go get my copy of whatever. It was all like Sharpie markered, double disc games, whatever, all burned. And I'm like, what the hell? And that's honestly when I first realized that you could do that. And he was like, oh yeah, man. All you gotta do is burn it this way, da, 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 and there you go. I am bought a game like forever. I'm like, are you kidding? And that's another reason.
Yes, say, and that probably also contributed. Now, I'm the first person to say that in like generally, the people who pirate games were never going to really buy your game in the first place, and that anti-piracy measures just generally punish the people who want to legitimately pay for your product, and so on and so forth. But that is not true in all cases, and certainly, any kind of developer is entitled to at least a bare minimum measure of please don't copy our shit. Because they're, for most people, the effort, like for me, like it's not like it's hard to download music or movies or anything like that. I can go type in watch Doctor Who into my Google search bar and, I'll find all kinds of dozens of things to go watch Doctor Who online, and not on cable or whatever. But there's an effort barrier there where I have to, actually open up a program and go type it and then hope I don't get porn or something like that. And for me, that minimum effort barrier makes it worth it to just go pay for the show or pay for the song or whatever. And then there are times where I do download things and then end up buying a whole buttload of merchandise, which, not to incriminate myself, but it's basically what happened with Adventure Time. I don't have Cartoon Network, I don't have cable. I wanted to watch a show, so I was like, all right, well, let's check the show out. And now not only do I have bought all the Adventure Time comics, I've bought Adventure Time accessories. I freaking troll the internet for cool Adventure Time fan art. Like, I'm a total fan, which would have never happened if I couldn't have accessed it the way that I did. But that's because the end product is otherwise entirely inaccessible to me. So, there's that balance to be struck between let's just make it downloadable wherever and whenever and hope people pay us.
Yeah.
And let's make it so difficult to get that people have no choice but to pirate it if they want to see it.
It's yeah, and that's and that there were a lot of factors that contributed to the demise of the Dreamcast. But overall, now some people would go, okay, well, that's fine and dandy, and Sega got into, the game making business exclusively, but then their output of games has been spotty at best. And I guess that's probably where my problem lies, is that Sega can be so creative. Like their stuff can be just so cool and fun, and they they have those Nintendo-esque qualities, and yet they still seem to put out more shovelware in the last few years than most people. And then when they do get a licensed product, it's kind of more, it's about, 80-20 when that thing comes out anywhere decent. They got the Marvel license for a minute, and then all those games except for like one was crap. I mean, like, they don't do themselves any favors, but they're capable of some really cool stuff. And
Sure. And it may also just be that even just being in the game market is what kept them alive. Like if they'd stayed in the console market, there's a very good chance that their company would have been crushed entirely, and then we wouldn't even get the 80-20, you know, we'd be like, exactly. We'd be doing shows. We're like, remember Sonic? Remember that game?
Remember Sonic? Vector Man? Yeah. And now they're, you know, shoveling to all kinds of systems. At this point, I know it's dated or whatever, but it's kind of cool that I can play Jet Set Radio on my Xbox. Like, it's kind of cool. You know, I'm just waiting for that, you know. Now, granted, so, and there's a, I remember listening to, at that point, there was a Twitter or tweet from one of the, like, community people over at Sega. And, you know, they constantly get, I mean, it's a cult favorite, this console. So they constantly get, like, why hasn't this game been released, like, in an HD remake or whatever? Like, Power Stone is a popular one, right? Now, and the guy eventually, like, thinking it's just been asked so many times, he finally just had it. So he tweeted out there, and he's like, okay, guys, Power Stone is made by Capcom. We do not own that license. Hence, we cannot release it. Like, other than being in, like, all caps, this thing was, like, very much, like, he was, at this point, just had it, right? You could just tell him, it was one of those things where he probably questioned whether he should hit send on the keyboard, but he did it anyway.
And then just went, fuck it, I just don't have the time.
I'm done.
Think about this anymore.
I'm done answering these stupid-ass questions about games that we have no control over. We cannot release a Power Stone remake if we wanted to.
Why haven't you released Final Fantasy VII? And they're just banging their head on their keyboard.
Yes. Like, you know, and then they answer, I mean, okay, to be a community manager must be frustrated because you answer a question and then 2 seconds later you get another tweet or an email from a person who asks you exactly the same question, and there's no FAQ long enough to get all of the questions out there that you don't want to answer. Like, that, it would be 10 pages long, and no one would read past question 5 because they just assume that their question's not on there. It must be a frustrating experience or whatever. I
recently published a recipe comic on how to make chili, like, and it was a good time. Like, I enjoyed making the little comic, and you know, I used to be a chef, so, like, I get kind of geeked out about food still, and da-da-da-da-da. But I spent the next 2 days answering the same questions. Like,
and that's about chili.
And that's how to make chili. You know, and there's one product that I was like, hey, I put pureed pumpkin in my chili. It tastes really good. No, really, you should try it. And oh my God.
And then
I was
people are like,
my day two, I was like, should I make a follow-up comic to explain all the things? No, that's not worth the effort at all.
No, it's done. Let them ask their questions, and if one is semi-relevant, you'll answer it. Yeah. So to go from that, we're actually going to talk about our Christmas list. So our gaming Christmas list of... Now, this doesn't have to be, because I remember I read your email. This doesn't have to be stuff that's actually coming out.
Ever.
Or that is on anyone's radar to actually release. This is like a wish list of what you would like for Christmas this year, as far as gaming is related. So with that, you can take the floor first.
All I want for Christmas is games.
With the musical accompaniment
I love Christmas music. I've been singing it. It's a thing. And you were bitching about musical episodes last week. I love the way when it's Christmas themed, it's suddenly okay.
It's okay if it's Christmas themed.
You know, I was thinking about trying to think of like made up stuff because there's real stuff that's coming out, but not really yet Christmas time. And you know, there's like 800 movies out right now that I kind of want to see. So it's not like I'm really suffering from a lack of stuff somehow, you know? So for me, it's things like it's the nostalgia things that I think I want. And that's kind of part of what Christmas is for me. You know, Christmas is all about remembering all the cool stuff that, you know, you used to do as a kid. And, you know, and Sonic's a good one. You know, I was reading that article on the Dreamcast stuff and kind of missing Sonic and thinking maybe I should go see if I can find a ROM to play on my computer and see if I can still beat the original Sonic in under an hour purely on muscle reflex that my brain has retained for no fucking reason. And I think for me, the big ones that I think would make good apps are, and I know I mentioned this briefly before, were Chrono Cross and Chrono Trigger. I miss those games, Matt.
It's making you cry a little, isn't it?
It's making me tear up. I'm going to play those games again. And I can play Chrono Trigger on my DS, except I don't have a DS anymore because my housemate was taking both his DS and my DS and using it to play Pokemans with himself.
That sentence can be construed in all kinds of ways.
Sounds terrible, doesn't it? But that's what he was doing, because he was leveling up his Pokemans against his other Pokemans. And then when his wore out, he'd borrowed it for so long, you know, I forgot he even had it. So when his wore out, I was like, whatever, dude, you know, just take my DS. I'm obviously not missing it. But the only thing I really miss about it is that Chrono Trigger's on there, but I don't want to carry around. I'm not fucking Batman. I don't want a damn utility belt with 800 gadgets, you know? I have a phone, which is cool. And I like my phone for social media stuff and for tech stuff. And then I have my tablet, which has the nicer graphics. And I want my old games on my tablet. I want like Mario and the Chrono Cross and Chrono Trigger and the Sega games and all these games that at this point should have no problem being ported in. I mean, not when I say no problem, obviously making an app out of a game is a huge undertaking, you know, because you basically have to redo the game from scratch. But the tablet can handle it, man. And I would pay money. I would pay $1.99 for these games.
Oh, you would actually pay $1.99?
I would pay probably upwards of, you know, $4 for these games.
Listen to that. You're leaving money on the table, folks. There's $1.99 right there.
Yep. So that's my thing. Like, I miss the nostalgia gaming, and it's mostly just me being wanting all of my gaming, you know, located in one place. All right, Matt. That's me. I'm having nostalgia fits. What are you up to?
Okay. I have a list.
All right.
Because in a very short time, I was able to come up with, like, a couple of these.
Dude, so, go for it. Well, I have a hard time with lists. I mean, my Christmases have always been, like, one or two major presents and then a whole bunch of fucking candy. Like, I get, like, at this point, like, 3 or 4 chocolate oranges every year, and I'm happy. Like, I'm just rolling around in chocolate orange. That's my thing. So, you know, everyone does Christmas differently. What's yours?
It's true. Okay, I want a special-themed Mass Effect 3 DLC pack that gives me the robot dog that I missed out on because my GameStop sold out of the special edition of pre-orders because Mass Effect and BioWare didn't let me know that they were timed exclusive. And it was within a day.
You want your dog?
I want my dog. No. I don't just want my dog. I want to be able to buy my dog, right? Because they still haven't released that where you can buy that. I want to buy my robot dog that walks with me on the ship. And I want him to have a Christmas hat. Because it's Christmas. Holiday themed DLC. I eat that shit up constantly.
Like, oh my god. And people would pay cash monies for that too.
I mean, seriously, if you price that anything below $5, I'd buy it in a heartbeat, right? Because I'm
that way.
It'd be
like $4.99, $99, $99, $99.
And I'll buy it. It's mine.
You're
and
like,
the dog,
it's not even a real number anymore. But
no,
I'll pay it.
And the dog is named Rainer. Because he's my favorite Green Lantern. Also, if this would be awesome if they actually let you name the dog. They won't. But if they let you name it, that would be cool. Because then it could be like, hi, Rainer, and you could teach him tricks. I've made all this up in my brain.
You make fun of me for my overinvestment in Dragon Age and making up backstory. I don't think you get to make fun of me anymore.
I don't think I do. So, second, and there will be a drum roll sound effect here. Second. Okay. That's a good one, too. We might leave that in. Final Fantasy VII Remake. I understand.
Yes, of course that's on there.
I understand. It's not going to happen. Like, I read it, part of that article. It was funny because they were like, yeah, Final Fantasy VII is the biggest cock tease in gaming. And it's true. Because they'll, like, show their leg a little bit, and they'll make these comments, and they never commit, and they're full of shit, and they won't ever release this damn thing. Even though it'll make a ton of money.
Don't slut shame.
It's true. It's true. Three. I want Beyond Good and Evil 2, damn it. Please make this game and stop making versions of Rayman. I understand Rayman's awesome, but please stop and focus on Beyond Good and Evil 2. I understand,
focus.
Like,
we need to focus a little.
Yes, I understand, like, 5 people bought it, including myself. And I bought it twice because I bought the remake and I bought the original game. And I understand this. However, it's going to be an awesome game. And it's on their back burner, like, perpetually. It's, like, never going to get made until they just have nothing else to do. Like, it's just one of those dials.
Yeah, well, we've cured cancer and fought off a zombie apocalypse. And we smoked all the pot. So I guess
we'll make the game. Fuck it. Yeah, who doesn't love a pig? Name Pig, P-Y-G. That's awesome. That's called irony, folks. Okay, so 4. I want the Disgaea series on the 360. I love Sony. I love the PS3. And there's no hate on you guys. But can I please get some RPG love on my 360? And the Disgaea series I love, and they're redoing, like, they're doing a follow-up sequel to the original Disgaea, and it's got all the return characters and stuff, and it will be back exclusively on the PS3, and I'm just like, all the RPGs, all these Japanese RPGs I keep reading of, and I don't even look at them anymore. I just look at the system they're based on. I don't even read previews, because it's like, I can't, it's untouchable fruit. It's,
you can't get your hopes up. You can't be like, wow, this is really cool. And yeah, because, for example, you know, we're watching the game trailer from earlier with the zombie apocalypse stuff, and I'm like, I'm not sure I'm ready to get a PS3. I just spent all this money on having to never play console games anymore.
And then 5. To round out, there is a new Marvel MMO that is being made by Gazillion Entertainment. Talked about it before. I'm excited, right? You can play as the characters in the Marvel U, and they're going to use a lot of people. I want a playable Cardiac. Now, like, 10 people like Cardiac. I understand he's a small character. Like, and I probably count for 2 of them, right? So there's...
Are 5 of those still you, just they're under just different internet screen names? Is that...
If there was a vote of who you wanted and Cardiac was on the list, like, I would be that American Idol voter who calls in, like, 12 times. Like, that's me.
You'd be creating all kinds of different profiles on Facebook. Oh. You'd be inventing entirely new Facebook people.
A ton of them.
To vote in their Facebook game if they had it.
And they're like, only 14 people voted on this, and 12 of them were the same dude. And I understand this. He's not a known character, and most people
who do
know him.
No, I have no idea who Cardiac is, and I know you've mentioned him before, and I apologize for not immediately memorizing everything about him there is to love. But
it turns out he's coming back in the books, and this excites me, but I want to play him with his giant bow staff that has, like, electricity on either end, and I want the 90s suit. I want him to be an obnoxious blue and white, the most unstealthy color.
I don't remember any of the 90s costumes being what you would call good.
Well, most of them aren't. He had a ton of pouches. Like, he was one of the prototypical 90s characters. But, so yes. Anyway, that is my Christmas list. That's my gamer Christmas list. Parata. And I think it's achievable. I think it's easily doable.
It's doable. 2013. It's going to be the year of making all of Matt's dreams come true.
I agree. I think so. 2013 is also the year that Man of Steel debuts. And because Man of Steel is coming out next year, one of the people I've talked to in the past, Justin Courthoff.
Wait, but Matt, I totally read that one review you linked before, and they said it sucks, so why are we...
But see? Because that was awesome. Way to bring up a story from a previous show.
I know.
I'm so proud.
You this with is... the segues and me with the continuity. It's like we're a comic book company that's growing up. It's great. Our plots are starting to make sense and shit. It's crazy times.
It's like we got editors. We finally started making money and got editors to look at all our shit and make sure it makes sense.
Yep.
It's awesome.
We fired all the stupid asses. That was basically.
But I recently had the fortune to sit down with Justin Courthoff, who's the community manager over at Robot Entertainment, makers of Hero Academy and Orcs Must Die and a bunch of cool stuff. And he is a huge Superman fan. We've actually debated Superman in the past because I tend to be a big Smallville fan, and to most Superman fans hardcore, that's like blasphemy, but I love it. So we ended up having that conversation in a previous show. But we have just a little bit of it's about 20 minutes or whatever. So we're going to take a break, but go ahead and give that a listen, and then we will be back with the Collardables and sounding off.
All right.
Hey guys and gals, Nido over here, and today I've got Justin Courthoff, the community manager at Robot Entertainment, with me. Talk about some Man of Steel, and talk about some other stuff. How are you, man?
Good, how are you doing?
Doing good today. Today's moving day.
Uh-oh.
And so I've been, yesterday was moving day, today is I'm cleaning up all my stuff before the deadline. So it's been a fun day so far. How about you?
And you're podcasting.
I know, right? Multitasking. That's right.
That's impressive.
Don't ever call out my dedication, folks.
Man, I know, right? Like, that's awesome.
What have you been up to?
Oh, sitting around. I've been sick all weekend, so I've been sitting around watching movies, and in fact, today I've been doing podcasts all day.
Well, that's always fun.
It's hard for me to, when someone says, "Hey, you want to talk about Superman?" I can't say no. I'm like, "Yeah, I do."
Yeah, that's like me and well, pretty much anything. I'll talk about anything. Okay, so I might as well launch into it. It's funny, right before I hopped on, I rewatched it. Man, it's a great trailer.
Is.
But okay, so roll with me. First, you saw the teaser. What did you think about the teaser? I don't actually think I've talked to you in a minute, so I didn't know what you thought of the initial teaser that came out.
I really liked it. I liked so I've for years been very anti dark Superman. I don't like when they make Superman moody and dark and Batman-y.
The best way
All
to
of
say
that
that.
said, I really liked the teasers. I thought the teasers were solid. I thought the teasers established a lot of really important things about the character, namely that he's isolated. You know, that teaser was full of imagery. It was full of Christ imagery with the fishermen and
Exactly.
those things. And then everything you saw came in ones, right? Like there was one person in the whole trailer, and it was him. There, when you see the bird, it's one bird by itself. When you see the butterfly, it's one butterfly. Everything is in isolation, and it set up this very clear tone of this is a person, this is a character that is alone, utterly. And I think that was a really interesting tone to set, and it set a very important tone for how they were going to treat this character going into the film. And I think they've sort of carried that through to the trailer, and then taking the next steps, and then I think we're going to get another a trailer with the Super Bowl, which will hopefully go the next steps and sort of introduce Zod more and more of that stuff. But I think as a as an initial teaser and sort of setting the tone and saying this is where we're pointing, I think it was really solid, and I really loved the versions that had the two, the two messages from his fathers, and how those were different, and how it was easy for Jor-El to be this aspirational figure because he was disembodied from it all, whereas Jonathan has to be a little more practical because he is his physical father. He's raising this boy, and he has a lot of fear for what could happen to his son if something goes wrong. And obviously, that all carried over into the trailer too. But
Yeah.
yeah, so.
So okay, so are you happy that they're going, from what it seems anyway, from the trailers, it seems like a generous part of this movie is going to be a little origin based. I mean, there's obviously the scene like with the bus and some other scenes of him as a child. Like, are you happy about that, or is it kind of the thing of we've already seen this 8 million times, why do we have to do this again?
Well, everybody's complaining about the origin. I think there's a lot of legitimate reasons to do an origin here. I think, they're making a clean break from everything that's come before. But what that means is they're going to set up some new rules about the universe. They're going to set up new rules about what a Kryptonian can do. They're going to set up new rules about what kind of villains there might be in this world, namely villains from the stars. And I think an origin is important in doing that because an origin is going to tell us what the new rules are. We all understand, yes, he came from Krypton, et cetera, but from what we from what we hear about the rumors of this film, there are some significant elements of it that happen on Krypton that establish a relationship between Jor-El and Zod, and so doing an origin in this regard is important to, like I said, establish those rules. We need this to tell us, this is our Superman universe that we're going into. This is what the future of the franchise is going to look like. And beyond that, if this really is a platform for them to start launching a JLA movie and other superhero films out of, if this is really, Superman in the comics, when he came out in 1938, he was the first. And he established what a superhero was. He established the capes and tights. And Superman was sort of the first public hero in the DC universe. And I think that if they're going to build off this to build a unified DC film universe, then we need the origin. We need to understand what the rules of our world are. We need to understand that this is a world that doesn't have superheroes. We need to understand why that's important. You can hear that in Jonathan Kent when he talks in the trailer. He's afraid, he's terrified because there is no manual for this.
Yeah.
Clearly, this is not a world where except like this exists, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't so quite so scared maybe, or if exceptional people do exist, they've been met with scorn. But I obviously, I think the obvious answer is this doesn't exist. So he's struggling a lot with how to raise a son who can lift a bus out of a river, you know? And that's all important because it isn't just Kal-El at this point. It's setting up the whole of that universe, that this is a world where extraordinary things don't happen. So I think it's important. And I think, you know, bringing Zod into it is going to change up the origin story quite a bit and add some new elements to it and tie a villain into the story that can actually throw a punch against Superman, while at the same time, he's part of Superman's heritage. He comes from Superman's planet. He's seen the planet. He's seen his father. All those wonderful tie-ins to, you know, Superman asks in the trailer, "I have so many questions," he says. Well, Zod has answers to those questions, but he also wants to kill you. So,
yeah, the worst guidance counselor ever.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I love about General Zod. Everybody hates on Zod, but I'm like, Zod is the most personal and physically threatening villain in Superman's rogues gallery because he knew Krypton. Like, Zod is the guy who has every answer that Superman wants to hear. He's the guy who can tell Superman what his father was like. He can tell him what it felt like to shake his father's hand or to be in his presence or to look at him or what the air on Krypton smelled like. He can tell him all these things he wants to know, but he just wants to murder him. Like, and at the end of it, you know, Kal's going to have to make a choice. He's going to have to choose. He's got Earth, who clearly these people on Earth don't trust him. They don't like him. They don't want him there. They don't trust him. He is an outcast. But he's going to have to choose between them and killing General Zod, the last of his own kind. So he's going to have to literally be forced to make the choice to make himself the last son of Krypton. And in doing that, he has to choose Earth. You know, he has to choose the people of Earth who hate him over his own blood, really, in a way.
Who also hates him.
Who hates him. So he's stuck between two worlds, and he's going to have to make some very important choices, and that's what makes an interesting character, is seeing the choices they make. So I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I got to say, the more the teaser, I liked the teaser. I didn't love it, but it accomplished in a very short little, you know, a teaser is basically supposed to get you interested in, you know, a matter of 30 seconds. And it actually did do that for me. And I was interested to see the full trailer. And then once I saw it, I've watched it, I guess, about 3 times now, maybe. And I'm getting a little giddy, and I'm cautious. I'm cautiously giddy, but I'm like, one of the things that's come up with the Superman trailer is, of course, now that Justice League has basically, I guess it's a real thing now.
It's a real thing.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'll tell you what, it's 2013 right now, basically, and they're saying 2015. So they've got 2.5 years if they want to do a summer launch, if they want to get their June or July window. Well, actually, May is Avengers. So yeah, they're going to have to go June or July. End of July is a big window for Warner Brothers. But they got 2.5 years to get there. They don't have a script. They don't have a director. They don't even know which heroes are in it, much less casting all of them. And then they have to shoot a superhero picture the size of Avengers with 5, 6, maybe 7 heroes in it. Do all the effects. There's no way. They don't make 2015.
Yeah, I don't think though, so either.
If it's winter 2015, maybe. But I don't think we're near that close. I think Man of Steel comes out this summer. It's a huge hit. And they say, you know what? Hold off on Justice League. We're going to make a Man of Steel 2.
See, that's what I think they're going to do.
Yeah, I think that's what they're going to do. I was actually talking to somebody today. I've been very against a Justice League movie because the word, for those who don't know, the word has been they're going to do the opposite of Marvel. They're going to do a Justice League movie with all the heroes in it. Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, presumably Flash, Green Lantern, maybe Hawkman or Hawkgirl, and maybe Martian Manhunter. But the idea is do a Justice League movie first and then spin individual characters out of that film. Sort of the exact inverse of what Marvel's done with the Avengers films. And I've been very much opposed to it until I thought about it in the sort of, again, today was the first time I thought about it while talking to somebody about if they do it like a comic, like the comic books, really, where if Superman really is the first and we establish that in Man of Steel, that there's nothing else in the world like him and he's already beaten Zod, but maybe his presence is enough that other people with superpowers go, well, maybe I don't have to hide this. And then along comes Darkseid, which is the rumored villain.
Yeah.
And along comes Darkseid, and Superman's trying to fight Darkseid, and it's not working. And then all these people come out of the woodwork that say, hey, I can do stuff too. Is there any way I can help this guy? I can see that being a formula for how you introduce all of these characters, because it's a world where there is only Superman, and suddenly other people who have abilities say, no, I can help here. And they come out, and then we introduce them all. We find out who they are. They defeat Darkseid, then they get their own spinoff. So it is, in a way, an origin film for seven other people, possibly.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know. I'm more on board with that idea than I have been anything previously about Justice League. I think it's a hard thing to do anyway, but we'll see.
Yeah. Now, okay, so then the Nolan interview that happened recently. Now, this could just be him playing with the media. However, do you think there's going to be a cameo?
No.
No.
No, there's things going on there. The only way that I think Gordon Levitt would be Batman is if Nolan leaves Warner Brothers. If he stops working with them, then they may force the issue, because they can do that. And Nolan wants that story to be over with. He's done with it. So
why wouldn't they then? Because Man of Steel. Is he doing, if there's a Man of Steel 2, is he even producing that?
Well, he's producing Man of Steel. It remains to be seen what happens after that, though. It's a question. Will Nolan go to Disney with Alan Horn, who he's good friends with? Or will he stick around at Warner Brothers? Warner Brothers would really like him to stick around. He makes them a lot of money.
Yeah, he does. He makes their movies good.
But he's also going to need a lot of creative freedom if they're going to do that. And they're going to have to let him do what he wants to do if they want him to godfather their superhero franchises. And I'm not convinced that Nolan wants to do that necessarily.
See, that's where I am. I don't think he wants to do that. I think he wants to go and do other stuff.
I think there's room there for him to train some people up, though.
Yeah.
At least some tones. But I don't think they're ready. We don't know what kind of a Batman Gordon Levitt will be, or if he'll even be Batman versus Nightwing or something like that. And I think introducing him as a fully realized Batman in Man of Steel or in a Justice League movie would be a monumental mistake, and you would be cutting off any future films right at the knees. You would not be giving that character an opportunity to find his sea legs, to explore what is John Blake's Batman like compared to Bruce Wayne's. How is he different now that he has no money and no real training? And, you know, what's that like for Blake? And that's an interesting story. If you want to continue that Bat universe, it's an interesting story to explore how John Blake would become, how he would take to the mantle of the Batman. And I don't think you just throw him in the cowl and put him in a Superman movie and say, well, that's canon now, and we have to write around that. I think that's a massive mistake, personally. And just don't take away from Superman. Like, this is Superman. Let Superman be Superman. You know, don't make it about the Batman cameo, you know? Don't make it about any of that. And if they are establishing a new unified universe, Superman's got to be the first, right? Like, don't throw him into a universe where Batman already exists. I say, I mean, that's my take on it. I wouldn't do that anyway.
Yeah.
It would raise questions about, like, well, where was Superman during everything happening in Nolan's trilogy? Like, you know, it raises too many questions, I think.
Yeah, and of course, DC is great about answering continuity questions. So I agree. I think it's funny. There's a part of me that would love to see Blake's Batman in separate movies.
Me too. I proposed the middle ground on Twitter a while back. I don't want them to continue those movies. Start with Man of Steel and build around that. Build around that character and build your other heroes as interesting contrast to him. What I would like to see Warner Brothers do is go to DC. DC's got this Earth One line. They've got all these alternate universes. I would like to see DC spin up a series of graphic novels set in the Nolan universe. You know, give me a graphic novel about John Blake becoming the Batman. Give me graphic novels that one a year, two a year, whatever, that continue Nolan's world and the characters in it and explore some of the more maybe exotic villains or even other heroes in that universe, you know. But I think there's a really good opportunity there. It just so happens that Warner Brothers, you know, owns a comic book company, and they can do that. They can get away with doing something like that. It's a much smaller sort of effort than a $200 million film, and it's a way to continue that sort of universe, that very literary, intelligent universe, without stomping on whatever your movie plans are, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'd love to see them do, but they won't, of course.
Well, maybe they will.
No, they're busy making Earth One, which makes no sense.
Yeah, well, Earth One was conceived, though, way before New 52 and all. I mean, that their whole line is...
Why Batman Earth One? Did you read that one?
I read the first Superman Earth One. I have not read the second part of that.
I haven't read the second one. I've read the first one. It was all right. It was an interesting reimagining, very dark.
Yeah.
But Batman Earth One, they just published... you know, 6 months ago, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's virtually the same Batman. Like, it's so similar that I'm like, why did you bother? Like, all like Cobble the Mayor, stuff like that. Like, they shuffled some pieces around, but it's not different enough to be like, check out this amazing, new, interesting take on Batman. It's pretty much the same thing. And it's just like, why does this book exist? Like, there's no reason for this. If you're going to do it, and go drastically different with it.
Well, exactly, because that's what makes the alternate universe things fun anyway.
Yeah.
Superman, the first one was pretty good. The second one I'm looking into, but again, why, if they
can't even get their main continuity right, why are you starting secondary continuities?
Well, that's been my whole argument ever since. I mean, that's the multiverse. I can't stand that damn thing because there's 52 of them, and it's like, really? You can't nail one. There's no reason to have 51 others.
And we'll see where it goes from there.
But as opposed to Marvel, who has made, they've basically reimagined all their stuff, but they've actually just taken the movies and they've implanted them. Like, there's now a book that is centered around the, you know, the Avengers team from the movies. And, you know, I mean, DC could do that too, you know, eventually, but they don't have enough built up in the movies to do that. So I don't know.
They got a long way to go.
Yeah, they got a long way to go.
But Man of Steel to me looks like a very good start. I'm very pleased with it. And it's, you know, it hit me when I was watching the trailer in theaters with The Hobbit. You know, I watched it on loop continuously the day it came out. While I was working, it was just playing in the background all the whole time. Cause I'm a little obsessed, but, it didn't really sink into me until I sat in the theater and watched it with a bunch of other people who were not necessarily hardcore Superman fans like me. And it sunk in when I was there that you get about halfway into that trailer before you even know it's Superman. Like, there's this story about this kid who did something remarkable and his parents are scared about it and nobody knows what's going on. And then all of a sudden, I have so many questions. Boom, he holds the key up and the Superman logo's on it. And you're like, oh, wow, this is Superman. And it was interesting to me because I've long said that Warner Brothers' problem is that when they develop all these properties pre-Nolan, is that they always put the cape before the character. And Nolan, with his Batman films, did the opposite. He was the guy who was smart enough to say, no, put the character before the cape. It doesn't matter. You know, when you look at the Batman trilogy that Nolan made, there's remarkably little time that Bruce is actually in the bat suit.
Yeah, it's very little.
I mean, The Dark Knight Rises is like a 2.5 hour film, and he's in the bat suit for maybe a half an hour. And you don't miss it. At any point in any of the three films do you go, man, I wish there was more pointy ears. Because you're so invested in the character who's inside that suit, right?
Exactly.
It doesn't matter if he's in a business suit, or if he's in a bat suit, or if he's in his pajamas. The character is who you care about, not just the armor. And it looks like they've finally done that with Superman. They've given you a reason to care about him as a character, as Clark Kent, and what his struggles are. And the cape is secondary to that. Cape is a sort of how he deals with his problems, but it's not about the cape, you know? And I think that's really interesting. And I think Nolan gets that more than most anyone. And I hope, you know, even if he does leave Warner Brothers, I hope that he has at least taught them that you put the character before the cape. When you look at their past films, Green Lantern and Catwoman and all these terrible, terrible movies they've made.
Ugh.
it's because the Warner Brothers people looked at it and they went, well, we're making funny pages. Just lots of, you know, lots of costumed characters fighting crime. Like, they have a very immature approach to it. And they don't, they see it as something different. They see it not as storytelling, but they see it as goofy stuff. And I think it's a huge mistake. And hopefully it doesn't come back to that after Nolan leaves.
I agree. And I thought one of the things, it reminds me of some of my favorite writers in the books who are able to take a character and it's, you know, of a 22-page issue, there's two pages that the character's in the costume.
Yeah.
And some people will say that's, to some people, they don't like that. To some people, they go, well, what the heck? I'm reading a comic book. And to the people who have followed that character for a long time, you're like, no, you actually appreciate when you can be interested for that many pages and they can just be talking. It's dialogue, you know?
Got the capes and punching.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I don't want that in every damn book, you know, that I read. And I read a lot of comics. But so far, I've been pleasantly surprised. I don't think it's I saw a lot of stuff. It's on Twitter that was, you know, especially when some of the first images were coming out, that it was dark. And after watching the trailer a couple more times, I don't think dark is the right word because it doesn't come across as dark to me. Now, their universe comes across more realistic in some ways, and it's a weird way
for sure.
Yeah, but it's not his isn't dark to me yet anyway.
It feels dark to me. It's one of my really only gripes with it is that I want it to get hopeful. I want it, you know, it's obviously about a lot of deep, scary things. It's about mistrust. It's about xenophobia. It's about, you know, death. I mean, there's a lot going on there that are some pretty dark themes. And I'm okay with those as long as we find the light at the end. As long as, you know, I mean, a friend of mine pointed out today that at no point does Superman smile anywhere in the trailer. And it's like, come on, it's Superman. Give me some light here. Give me some hope, you know. And, you know, I trust that they're on a journey with him. I trust that by the end of the film, there will be trust there. There will be some sort of growing affection between Superman and Lois Lane. There will be light in among all this dark. But I think, you know, when you look at a film like this, you've got to set what the tone is. Not for the whole film necessarily, but for when people go into the theater to sit down. You need to set the right tone for the moment they start the movie. And then once they're on that journey, you can take them wherever you want to take them. But you've got to set the right tone for that initial get you in the seat to see what happens. And I think that's what they're doing. They're setting up a very scary world for a person like this, that despite all of his power, there's real reasons to be afraid in this world of what might happen.
Exactly. And I do hope the same thing, that by the end of this movie, and I think they will, by the end of this movie, it's going to leave off with a more hopeful message, and for this character anyway. And you need that, you know, as I know everyone just loves The Dark Knight, and I do too, but I agree with what you said before, that everything cannot be that. And you don't need everything, nor want it to be that. And I think Superman, the reason why Superman works so well in the books when he's teamed up with Batman is because they represent both sides of the spectrum. Yep. And they play off each other very well. And sometimes, to me, you need the other one to realize why the other one is necessary.
Yes, the best moments ever, I think, in comics with these characters has been when the two of those guys are stuck together.
Exactly.
You see so much of them in so little when they're put together with a good writer. And, you know, it's one of those things that a buddy and I have talked about, like, screw Justice League. Don't even do Justice League. Reboot your Batman, do them the right way, and then do a World's Finest movie. Do that first with Batman and Superman stuck together, and then maybe go out to the Trinity where you add Wonder Woman, and then go out to your Justice League. Like don't just try to leap straight to the circus act where you've got six trapeze artists, you know, in clashing spandex trying to compete for screen time. It's hard with DC. I mean, Marvel has the advantage, I think, in that, particularly in the film universe, when you look at those characters, there's a lot of variety in those characters. They're not all just straight up spandex heroes, right? The Hulk is a physically different monster. The Iron Man is wearing a suit of armor. Their differences go beyond the color of their spandex.
Exactly.
You know, but when you look at the DC lineup, they're all spandex clad heroes. So when you throw six people with different colored spandex together, it looks like a circus.
Yeah.
And it's hard to overcome that. It's going to be very hard to overcome that. So, I mean, they have a challenge. I'm curious to see how they solve it. I hope they do a good job with it, but we'll see.
But we'll see. All right. Well, I will let you go. I know you got I'm going to take it easier on your voice. You've been doing a couple of these today. Always, man, always up to talk some Superman. I'm actually happy that I got to talk about that. I don't always get to talk about it all the time.
Sorry, I did talking there.
No apologies are necessary. For one, because if anyone questioned your passion about the character, all they have to do is listen to this.
Yeah, I...
Trust me. No, it is. This is a good thing. Trust me. That's why when my girlfriend asks me about, she'll ask me a Spider-Man related question, and I'll go, "Do you want the answer?"
Yeah. Which answer do you want?
Yeah, yeah. Do you want the answer I've prepared for like dinner when people just ask me about a movie, or do you want the real answer? Because we're gonna cover about 5 years worth of continuity.
That's how it is. Like, if somebody asks me about Superman, I'm like, okay, how much time you have?
Exactly.
Like dinner or something? How do you want to do this?
But it's totally, no, it's totally cool, as always, man. All right, well, you can always catch Justin at 6OK on Twitter. And anything you want to plug or talk about before we go?
No. I'm good.
Got it. All right, man. Well, I'll have to make sure if we see another big big trailer in the Super Bowl time, we might have to have you back on and talk some about that.
I think we're going to see one at Super Bowl time.
I'm excited.
I've heard, so. All right, man. Thank you for having me on.
All right, no problem, man. Thanks a lot. And we're back. Hope you enjoyed that little banter back and forth. I'm actually really looking forward to that movie.
I am too, actually. And again, you know, Superman is a hard character to do well sometimes, but I'll be interested to see if they pull it off. That's always the curiosity. Like, did they make him cheesy or too emo? God, why did we have a stretch of like emo superheroes? Who thought that was a good idea?
But well, yeah, and well, you know, it works for. It's funny because, and we even talked about this. You know, what works for one character doesn't necessarily work for everybody else. And Batman is a brooding, darker character.
Sure.
And that treatment does not work for
anyone
the Flash.
Except Batman.
Yeah, you know, it's like they're completely opposite characters, and sometimes Hollywood just doesn't understand that.
Yeah, I mean, even when Nightwing takes over Batman, he doesn't brood. It's not like, well, I'm Batman now, I guess I have to sit on the rooftop and make frowny faces, you know.
Exactly, like, and that was one of the things that made it cool, was when he took over, it was like, it was different, you know?
Yeah.
It's even the arguments about the cape, which were like, you know, he was talking to Alfred when he took over, and he was like, God, how does he wear this thing? This thing is so long and huge and bulky. He's like, I can't jump correctly and all this other stuff. And you think about it, he's an acrobat. So
yeah, right.
And his costume.
Way. And yeah,
his
Batman's
costume
the elite
sleek.
Superhero too, by the way, that I am comfortable with wearing a cape. Everyone else could just get rid of their capes and be fine. But Batman actually uses his cape all the freaking
time. Yeah,
so.
And he's trying to scare people, and he uses it to blend in. And yeah, he actually uses it. It's not just an accessory.
He gets a pass. So, so I'm looking forward to the Superman movie too. I hope it's good. Amongst the other tons of superhero movies we're getting, I know that every time I mention Guardians of the Galaxy, John's face just lights up. He gets that look on his face like he's a freaking emoticon, you know?
I'm
like,
so excited for that
impossibly
movie.
Large smile and all of that. So, you know, definitely a lot to look forward to in the next coming years in the comic book game front, but. What I'm really enjoying right now is there was this artist, Mark DeSantos, and I saw them, like, I almost didn't send it to you just because I saw these pictures all over the place and figured that it was going to be pretty saturated. But at the last minute, I decided that they were just too awesome to pass up. And basically, Mark DeSantos has taken riffs on Norman Rockwell-style paintings, and instead of the New York Evening Post, it's the Gotham Evening Post. So you have things like, I know, and it looks great. I mean, they look perfect. You have things like Batman lurking outside that quintessential family dinner where mom's serving the turkey in front of the Christmas tree, and Batman's outside the window being a creeper, as Batman does. don't lie. You know it in your heart to be true. But my favorite ones are actually, I mean, and they have a Batgirl and Robin and some of called Catwoman stuff. Actually, the bottom one on this post of Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn and Catwoman in jail, and somehow it's still a Norman Rockwell painting is totally really kind of cool.
That's probably my favorite.
But I got to admit, it's the Harley and the Joker ones that get me, where it's the those family dinners or Harley adjusting the Joker's tie, where it is totally that quintessential Norman Rockwell idealism, and then you remember who these people are, and that the turkey they're serving is not a turkey, it's a pig with a little bat cowl on it and an apple.
I love that. I know. I ate that up.
So yeah, the details in it are great, and it is totally like these gorgeous. And I'm not usually a big fan of mashup art because I find it kind of trite, you know. But this is not mashup art. It's not two different arts that were smashed together. This is a certain concepts done in an artistic style, which I do really enjoy. So I am impressed by Mr. DeSanto's work. And the great thing is, and I just noticed this when talking to you, is that the prints are available at $10 a pop. And I'm like, yes, I would plaster these all over my house at $10 a pop.
Sign me up. Yeah, $10 is great for that. Yeah, and my art doesn't it's a little bit nor. It's kind of the same thing, right? So every week, comic book, and I will actually have a link to before I move on. I will have a link to the page, the art of Mark DeSantis, where you can get those prints and stuff. Sure. So I will probably feature that as one of the headline pictures. So just click on the big pick, yeah. And you can head to that page. And for mine, though, it's actually comicbookresources.com does a thing every week where it's called The Line It Is Drawn. And it's a feature that they do, and it's the kind of same thing. What they end up doing is they throw out an idea, normally that's kind of from the community. They throw out an idea of, hey, take this thing, and the community comes up with these, and then they'll give their like round table of artists this two themes. It's almost like if Whose Line did art. So okay. They field these things, and then like they'll take one for every week, and then they'll go, okay, they'll give their round table of artists this idea and come up with something. And so this week, it was actually featured in week 97 of The Line It Is Drawn, and it was comic book characters in Norse style. And so you go, okay, cool. One of the ones was done actually by, and it's DeviantArt user M7781. And it was actually, some of this art was featured on Geek Tyrant as well. He did a Boba Fett and Deadpool beating the crap out of mascots at Disney World.
Oh,
which is kind of awesome.
I missed that one. I follow Geek Tyrant, but I didn't quite catch that one.
But his name is Marco D'Alfonso. And this one was actually a Robots in Disguise, a Transformers one, and it was done in the very, like, noir cinema style, so very much like a pulp poster.
It was definitely like Casablanca level noir, right?
And it has Megatron and Optimus Prime and RC, and it's just got them. I mean, it's very, you know, I love the little thing at the bottom. It's like, can anyone stop Megatron, the Mad Gunman? You know, very over the top, you know. It's got the more than meets the eye thing in there. It's just fun. It's a cool piece of art. It's kind of fun. And
totally dug it. I squeaked when I saw it, and I passed it around pretty much immediately to people more interested in Transformers than I. I didn't grow up watching Transformers, so for me, the premise of robots that are also people is in that context, is kind of hilarious. Like the whole Robots in Disguise thing. You know that's cheesy, right? Like,
it's awesome.
It's cheesy and awesome. All right, there you go. But yeah, I mean, I think for me, without that nostalgia factor, it's hard to get as enthusiastic. I think absolutely. Giant robots are really cool, so I really like the designs and watching all of that stuff. But
when it comes to, hey, they transform and then they interact with the humans, all that, it's just not your bag. I totally get that. Like, explaining that to people who have no exposure is like the looks on people's faces sometimes. Are you kidding me? So they're robots that talk and they transform into automobiles. Correct. Oh, and some transform into construction vehicles. Okay. Oh, dinosaurs.
Don't forget the dinosaurs.
Yeah. Who's like, you know, Grimlock is like one of my favorite Transformers ever. And explaining that he's a robotic T-Rex is like, I mean, the looks on people's faces when you try and tell them these things. And you're speaking about it in a passionate, no, you don't understand how cool this is way.
Let me explain it to you.
And they look at you like you're a buffoon. Sometimes, you know, that can, it is what it is. But yeah, I totally get it. You know, whatever. But before we go, do you have anything else that you wanted to touch on?
No. I'm on hiatus right now until the end of the new until the new year, and then I'll come back. I'm working on some stuff kind of behind the scenes, so I'm hoping to have something cool to show you by then. But if not, just know it's because I just had a very Merry Christmas, you know.
Good deal. Well, then that was for a good reason. We normally end the show by doing a sounding off segment, which is our normal, opportunity to just rant or whatever. And there were a couple candidates, and that kind of thing. But honestly, just wanted to let for anyone who's actually listening to the show, I there's so many other important things to be focusing on. But for the 20 children and the 6 adults that were lost in the Connecticut school shooting, we just wanted to send our prayers and thoughts out, and let you know that you are in our hearts for this Christmas, and we are sorry for this just terrible thing that has happened.
It's a horrible tragedy, exactly. Yep.
So on that solemn note, we are going to let y'all go, but join us next week when we talk about some other Christmas stuff, and we hope you have a wonderful week before Christmas.